Welcome to the May 26th regular closed session meeting of the East Bay MUD Board of Directors. Due to COVID-19 and in accordance with Alameda County Health Order 2010, issued April 29, 2020, and with the Governor's Executive Order N-2920, which suspends portions of the Brown Act, this meeting will be conducted via teleconference only. In compliance with these orders, a physical location is not provided for the meeting, and these measures will only be in effect as long as state or local public health officials have imposed or recommended social distancing. Directors Coleman, Katz, Linney, McIntosh, Mellon, Patterson, and myself, Marguerite Young, are participating via teleconference. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Present.
Present.
Here.
Here.
Present.
Present.
I am here. We'll now have open for public comment. We will take the Board of Directors is limited by state law to providing a brief response, asking questions for clarification, or referring the matter to staff. If there is anyone on the phone who wishes to speak on in public comment before our closed session, we will take names in alphabetical groupings. And the secretary will call your name and let you know when your time begins. If when you are called, state your name, affiliation, and if applicable, your topic. Secretary will keep track of your time. If there's anyone here for public comment with last name beginning A through F, okay, G through L. M through R. And S as in Sam through Z. Okay, hearing no members of the... Okay, thank you. If I could, this is President Young. not really responding to public comment other than sounds like the audio portion was bad. We did definitely have technical difficulties this morning, but I can assure you that the word layoffs actually really never slipped off the lips of anybody in terms of any contemplated action. So just to clarify what you may have had difficulty hearing. With that, we will adjourn to continue our recess to continue our closed session meeting in another room and reconvene here at 1:15 for our regular meeting. Board members, please refer to your instructions on how to dial into the closed session. Thank you. Welcome to the regular business meeting of the East Bay MUD Board of Directors. Due to COVID-19, in accordance with Alameda County Health Order 2010 and with the Governor's Executive Order N2920, which suspends portions of the Brown Act, this meeting is being conducted via teleconference only. In compliance with those orders, a physical location is not provided for this meeting, and these measures will only apply during the period in which state or local public health officials have imposed or recommended social distancing. Directors Coleman, Katz, Linney, McIntosh, Mellon, Patterson, and myself, Marguerite Young, will be participating via teleconference. Can we have the roll call, please, Madam Secretary?
Directors Coleman?
Present.
Katz?
Present.
Linney?
Here.
McIntosh?
Here.
Mellon?
Present.
Patterson?
Here.
President Young?
I am here. Okay, do the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic of America, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we have three presentations. Mr. General Manager, if you could please take it away.
All right. Thank you, President Young and board members. Yes, this is, I can't remember the last time that we received three awards, and so it'll take a moment and I'll go through all of them. These are awards related to our budget, we've received awards from both the Government Finance Officers Association and the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers. And the first award is the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. For the past 16 budget cycles, the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada has presented a Distinguished Budget Presentation Award to the district for its published budget document. In order to receive the award, the district's fiscal year 20 and 21 budget document had to meet stringent guidelines and program criteria as a policy document, operations guide, financial plan, and communications device. Three independent reviewers from the U.S. and Canada rated the documents and provided suggestions for future improvements. The second award is the Excellence in Budgeting Award, and for the fifth time, the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers has presented the Excellence in Budgeting Award to the district. This award is a higher level award with additional requirements that must be met. Similar to the prior award, the program is designed to recognize those agencies that have prepared a budget document that meets certain standards. In addition, an independent reviewer from a California agency rated the budget documents and also provided suggestions for improvements. Congratulations to the staff that put this winning budget together and that they continuously strive to make it a better product. These staff members include Jean Chase, Suzanne Delbu, Richard Liu, Joan Louie, David Mercado, Jenny Tam, Cindy Vong, and Amy Yen. And then finally, we received the Award for Excellence for the first time ever from the Government Financiers Officers Association. And we received this for the fiscal year 20 and 21 budget publication. And the award was given in the category of Exceptionally Well Implemented Best Practices. And GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association, said that it is proud to recognize this initiative as a contribution to the practice of government finance that exemplifies outstanding financial management. And this is for the budget in brief. You'll remember, board members, we put together a small handout that can be utilized to simply explain the budget to interested parties. This award acknowledges the creative and innovative effort that was and provides an example for other jurisdictions to follow and promotes best practices in government finance. So we'd like to congratulate the staff that created this winning budget in brief publication and engaged employees in sharing it with the public. And thank you to our field staff who share the document with our ratepayers when they have questions about the work that we do in the streets. And the employees that were involved in this included Michael Bergstrom, Gene Chase, DeLorean Johnson, Joan Louie, Antonio Martinez, David Mercado, Andrea Pook, Jenny Tam, Cindy Vong, and Amy Yen. So three awards. Congratulate me in your with your virtual applause.
Okay. There are no announcements from closed session, unless, Craig, you're going to correct me.
No, you are correct. No report out of closed session.
We'll now turn to public comment.
Participant lines unmuted.
The board's limited by state law to providing a brief response, asking questions for clarification, or referring a matter to staff when responding to items that are not listed on the agenda. If you are participating via telephone and wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, what we will ask, or what I will ask, is that you will be calling names in alphabetical groupings. The secretary will take the names and compile a list and then call those speakers in the order received. The secretary will further keep track of your time and inform you when you may speak and when your time is concluded. You'll have 3 minutes, but I can adjust that time based on the number of speakers. For other agenda items, we'll follow the same process and will be heard when the item is up for consideration. If you are not speaking, please place your phone on mute to decrease background noise. I'll first ask any persons whose last name begins with the letter A through F to identify yourself for public comment. Okay, the letters G through L.
Eric Larson, President, asked me Local 444. I'd like to speak on item 7 of the consent calendar.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Letters M through R. M as in Mary through R as in Robert. Okay, and lastly, letters S as in Sam through Z as in zebra. Okay, last call for speakers in public comment for items not on the agenda. Okay, we will then not close public comment and move on to the consent calendar, and we will pull item 7 from the consent calendar. Are there any other items that board members wish to pull for discussion from the consent calendar?
Move 1 through 6 and 8. I'll second, John.
Okay, that has moved. Consent calendar is moved by Director McIntosh and seconded by Director Coleman for items 1 through 6 and 8. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. And I do have to make just one comment. Having experienced, as I know Director Lenny has, the Rogue Jet Boatworks boats in action on the Rogue River, the Ranger Patrol is going to be well served by the boat and trailer that we're getting.
We don't have to worry because it's named Rogue, do we?
I don't think so. They do go fast, though. They make a big wake, or can make a big wake. Okay. Eric, would you like to speak on, or how do you want to do? You want to hear the item and then speak, or speak first?
Whatever suits the wish of the board.
Okay. Alex, do you want to share the item, and then we'll get public comment?
So item 7, the materials are in your packet, and this is to authorize an amendment to an agreement that we already have with Bradley Tanks to increase the contract amount from about $2.6 million to $3.3 million, and this adds an additional year to allow for slurry management. And I think it would be better to hear the comments from Eric, and then we can work to try to provide additional information if that...
Okay.
Eric, your time is going to start now.
Sure, yes. Good afternoon, President Young and board members. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak on item 7. Local 444 opposes the proposed increase of this contract award, and Local 444 opposed the original contract award. This is a $2.5 million increase to BPI for slurry management. The original contract award was $350,000 for 1 year with an option to extend an additional year. Only 5 months into this pilot project, the district has already spent $532,000. A huge cost overrun was due to contractors having to haul to the landfill in Yolo County after losing their permit to dispose of the liquid portion after dumping mud into the headworks at SD1, which is exactly what the local told management was going to happen, because contractors don't care about protecting our resources. They just care about making money. Now they're asking to amend this contract to award for a $3.3 million boondoggle. BTI, to be sure, will be back next year asking for an additional $5 million. The alternative, which the local has repeatedly asked management to consider, to have district forces doing this work, is not recommended because, as stated in your board packet, the district does not have the proper equipment to manage and haul all of the resulting water, wastewater, and soil, which was exactly the problem that the local had with this project from the get-go. Let's use our equipment. Let's make sure it hooks up to our trucks, to our trailers, to our vectors, so that we can manage this slurry and protect the resources of the district. Our drivers are not going to haul mud knowingly down to SD1 and try to dump it in the headworks. We're going to do the best job at managing and learning to manage this slurry that we can possibly do. So the union in our most recent meetings with management, offered a conciliatory $300,000 to buy the equipment. It's just a couple simple tanks and pumps. It's not complicated. It's not a, and we can run it. Just buy that equipment, turn it over to us, and let us have that equipment to manage our own slurry.
Okay, thank you, Eric. That's time. Alex or Clifford or who's the right staff person?
So, President Young, I'll start it off, and then this is in the domain of our Director of Engineering Construction, Jimmy Aloye. So I will say that we appreciate the input that Local 444 has provided, and Eric in particular, and that over the coming months, our intention is to incorporate the lessons that we learned through this pilot into the fiscal year 22-23 budget, and that not only does it require equipment, but it also would require additional staff resources. And so our thought is we're not saying no to Local 444, but rather on the immediate, we don't have free resources. We'd have to take them off of something else. And so we would proceed with the contract, which we are certainly learning things through utilizing it, and then incorporate those lessons into the fiscal 22-23 budget. If you have more specific questions, then I'll ask Jimmy Aloye to come forward, but I'm not sure if you do.
Are there questions from board members? Or Jimmy, do you have anything you want to share in addition? Meetings have happened with the local, and I'm sorry, I'm not juggling all the papers of the meeting very well, but between the one device I have, to understand whether there's more time would yield a different result or not. Because it sounds like what we're saying is not no, but not yet.
Hello, this is Jimmy Ali. Yes, President Young. General manager was pretty accurate.
If I turn it on, it's going to... Okay.
We're working to turn the mic on at the podium.
Go ahead. Yes, hello. President Young, members of the board. The general manager was pretty accurate in his statements. Unfortunately, the original estimate for how much slurry was going to be handled was underestimated, which is a main part of the reason that we are coming back for an increase in the cost. The district and staff is not saying no to Local 444 at this time, but the resources are not currently available. And in order to continue managing the slurry, which the funds will run out at the end of this month, we do need to increase the dollar amount in order to continue the contract. So your specific question, whether it was additional time would yield a different result, we do not really have additional time to stop and make a change, but we have committed to Local 444 at those meetings that we would continue discussions, set up a working group to talk about how Local 44 staff could be integrated into the work and address any equipment and resource issues as part of the FY22-23 budget.
And were the fines that Eric referred to paid for by the contractor and not part of our contract, or are we on the hook for that?
This is at SD1.
I wasn't aware that there were any fines. We the permit was pulled, and which is why for some period of time the liquid waste was being hauled to Yolo County. But the contractor can operate the system to meet the permit requirements, they would be able to dispose that SD1.
Okay. Any other board member questions or comments?
Marguerite, that's Eric, and he said he had a question.
Oh, Eric, I'm sorry.
How many operators could we hire for $3.3 million?
Well, the labor costs for the contract are not as high as you might think. We for the components of sending the waste, the liquid waste to SD1, plus maintenance of the hydrovac equipment at the site is about 10% of the total cost. There's a fair amount of monitoring that goes on, and there is one operator that BTI is providing that does that between both the Oakport site and the Briones site.
So the bulk of the costs are for disposal.
Yeah, the bulk of the costs are for the disposal of the wet slurry in particular. That's the bulk of the cost.
Hauling and disposal.
Well, this work is consistent with the work of local 444 operators, heavy transport operators, and heavy truck drivers. The district will continue to produce slurry. Vacuum excavator trucks, we're buying more. We're not hiring them. There's going to be a lot more slurry management, and local 444 and East Bay Mud should be doing this work together rather than giving our money to contractors. All those contractors care about is making a profit.
Okay. Thank you, Eric, for that further clarification of the local's position. Do I have a motion on the item? We don't have a motion yet. So.
This is John. I'll move the item.
This is Frank. I'll second it.
Okay, discussion? Okay, hearing no requests for discussion on the item. Roll call vote, please.
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. Okay, get back to my agenda. We will now, very difficult to, I don't like to print things out. It's very difficult to juggle. Let me open my public hearing agenda. Okay, we'll now proceed to item 9.1, which is to conduct a public hearing to receive comments from any representatives from Union Pacific Railroad Company on a resolution of necessity for eminent domain proceedings for an easement on a Union Pacific Railroad Company property, assessor's parcel number 74-906-41-1, adjacent to Barnhill Marina, in support of the Oakland Inner Harbor Pipeline Crossing Project. The public hearing is now open. Andrew Lee will provide a brief presentation. Andrew?
Yes, good afternoon, board members. And this presentation, as you mentioned, is on the domain action needed to support the Oakland Inner Harbor Crossing project. Okay. I'm trying to advance to the next slide. Risha, I requested for control.
You have control.
Are you seeing the next slide?
Not yet. Let me see.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead. There you go.
All right. So we're on slide number two. The Oakland Inner Harbor Crossing is a project that delivers water to nearly 80,000 residents in the city of Alameda. And for a project this magnitude, the district need to acquire a number of different property rights ranging from easements to permanent land rights. And any inability to acquire any one of those rights could jeopardize the overall success of the project. So some background, Alameda is fed by four pipeline crossings at four different locations around the island. And this particular project is to replace the existing Alice Street crossing, which was built in 1946. As I mentioned, this new project is really about reliability and providing redundancy for the city of Alameda. And this is one of our larger projects with the construction cost value at around $30 million. So the project has two key components. The first component is the new crossing to replace the existing. You can see here, this is the new crossing being built in blue. And then the second component is to replace, to remove the this portion of the pipe, the existing crossing, from service once the new crossing is constructed. So that is the topic of today's conversation about how to abandon the existing crossing. So the first component of the project is going well. In fact, the design work is right on target, and the project will go out for construction next year. However, our progress on the second component of the project to abandon the existing crossing is being held up by this very small piece of easement needed from the Union Pacific Railroad. And as you can see from this map here, the portion of the existing Alice Street crossing runs through this piece of property right here owned by Barnhill Marina. And in order to abandon the existing crossing, the district must relocate two of the existing meter from the current location to a water main located on the Marina Village Parkway on the street. So right here is where we want to relocate the meter to, and this is where the meter is right now located in the middle of the property. Now, due to the parcel configuration, what you can see, the railroad property actually separates the marina from the street. And the district cannot complete the relocation work without an easement from Union Pacific. Now, though the Union Pacific indicated they are willing to grant the easement to the district, it does come with a number of demand and restrictions, and which make the condemnation our only alternative to advance this project. Just to share with you what the demands are from the railroad is that they insisted on the district getting an easement that is much larger than what we need. We need about 300 square feet. The Union Pacific Company is asking us to get an easement area that is in the size of about 1,000 square feet. They also insist on a price that is much higher than what the appraised value of that easement is. The value of the appraised easement is about $2,100, and the price they are asking for is about $40,000+. However, that is not really the most impactful restriction. The other impactful restrictions that they would condition the easement on the fact that they can require the district to relocate the new meter at any time without cost to another location. However, there's really no other location to relocate another meter at this point. If you can see that the area is very small, as you can see here, and is completely separated by this area in green. So the board is familiar with this slide here. And in order to start the eminent domain proceedings, we have to first conduct the public hearing to allow the property owner to address the board. And second is to adopt a resolution of necessity. And in order to adopt the resolution, the board has to make four findings. That the project is necessary, the property right to support the project is also necessary, and the project will accomplish the least injury to the railroad and the most public good. Offer of just compensation has been made to the railroad company. So moving on to the next slide. The project is necessary for reliability and redundancy for our customers in Alameda. And because the existing crossing is vulnerable during an earthquake, the new crossing is absolutely necessary and essential to ensure that we have reliability for our customers in Alameda. And of course, upon the completion of the new crossing, the existing crossing must be abandoned to close out the project. And before the existing crossing can be abandoned, the meters feeding the Barnhill Marina must be relocated to Marina Village Parkway. The water services to the marina are not interrupted. This relocation work may not sound very, important and significant, but it's actually critical in order to maintain service to the marina, which then can allow the district to move forward with the remainder of the project, which is to abandon the existing crossing. So the easement is absolutely essential to support the relocation work and the abandonment of the existing crossing. Before arriving at the decision to exercise eminent domain, we did look at a number of alternatives through our engineering department. However, we were unable to find a viable alternative because the surrounding utility conflict that makes the easement from the railroad the only option to support the relocation. And relocation of the Barnhill Marina meters also ensures that the water services to the marina remains uninterrupted. So as you can see here, the yellow is the area of easement we would need from the railroad to get the water service to the marina. So moving forward with condemnation will not harm the railroad because the property is actually is vacant, as you can see in this picture here. Actually, it's also unused by the railroad and is considered surplus by Union Pacific. And in fact, they are willing to grant the easement to the district for the right price and right restrictions. The property is also cannot be developed or used for any other purpose because currently is serving as a driveway to the Barnhill Marina. There will be no impact to the railroad's operations since there are no active tracks in the area, both ends. And in opposite, it has enormous public benefit. And acquiring this easement would allow the district to complete our work to relocate the meters and abandon this crossing and close out this very essential project, which delivered water to an entire city. And also lastly, that just compensation has been made to the railroad at this point. So today, we're asking the board to adopt a resolution of necessity authorizing the general counsel to file eminent domain action in the county superior court. With that, I'll turn it over to questions if the board have any questions for me.
Board members, questions for Andrew?
Yeah, this is... I was just going to say, this is Doug. We met on this at the planning committee last month and supported moving it forward.
Okay. Director McIntosh, I thought I heard you say something.
Yes, I'd like to move to adopt the resolution of necessity making the four required findings.
Yeah, we need to actually, we're in a public hearing, so there's some more steps, but when it is appropriate to offer the motion, I will give the opportunity to do so.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Yes, I had Andrew, I just wanted to find out if we've heard anything further from the railroad folks on this since our last meeting.
So
Okay.
That is my next question in the public hearing process.
Great. We have not heard from them since the planning committee meeting. I know Matt Alawat is on also on this call. Matt, have you heard from them since then? Matt? Okay. I'm not sure Matt is on the call or not, but at least from what I know, we have not heard from the railroad since.
Okay.
Andrew, I'm on the call, but I don't know if you can hear me.
I can.
We can hear you now.
We hear you now.
We have not heard from them, no.
Okay. All right, then. Are there any representatives from Union Pacific Railroad Company on the line to address the board and provide any comments? Please speak now. Okay. Are there any other interested persons in on the line who wish to address the board on this matter? Okay. Hearing none. I now first would ask for a motion to close the hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Is that Director Patterson?
Yes.
And a second?
Director Mellon.
Okay, moved by Director Patterson, seconded by Director Mellon to close the hearing. We need a roll call vote to close the public hearing.
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. Okay, now we will, I'd be happy to entertain Director McIntosh's motion on item 9.2.
Second that with findings.
Okay. Risha, do we need to do more than that? Do we need to read this out, or?
If you could just please read the description of what we're voting on, that would be appreciated.
We're going to adopt a resolution of necessity for eminent domain proceedings for the acquisition of an easement from Union Pacific Railroad Company and authorize the general counsel to file eminent domain actions in Alameda County Superior Court consistent with the findings that staff provided, and that was moved by Director McIntosh and seconded by Director Patterson. If there is any discussion. Okay, I think we're ready for a roll call vote.
Roll call vote. Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. Okay, that was unanimous. And we are now on to determination and discussion. Item 10, Board of Directors vacation scheduling.
Right, President Young, board members. So this is an item that came up earlier this year at President Young's suggestion that we facilitate a conversation about not this year, but next year, 2021's board vacation, summer vacation schedule. And so to this end, the Secretary of the District did some research, and I'll turn it over to her to provide a presentation that might help you with your thoughts and decisions in this area.
Good afternoon. You received a memo on this topic, so the slide presentation kind of follows the memo. History, as you can see on the slides, from the 70s to about 85, the board scheduled their meetings in six-month increments, and during those six-month increments, they chose to cancel their meetings in either August or December. In about 1986, our records show that they began to vote consistently to cancel the meeting scheduled for the second Tuesday in August. And around the mid-80s is when they set the meetings to occur on the second and fourth Tuesdays in on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. So that's the history of how the vacation schedule came to be and how we're canceling the second second meeting in August. We also did a survey of other water and wastewater agencies and the JPAs, of which we are members, and found that they don't have annual vacation schedules. Moving on to the next slide. Hold on. They don't have, they don't vote to have an annual vacation schedule. The DERWA and UMRA does not have an annual vacation schedule. FREWA, the Freeport Regional Water Authority, has scheduled the latter half of June and early July for its 2020 vacation. And from discussions with them, I believe they set their vacation schedule each year. The survey was with Contra Costa Water District, Delta Diablo, Castro Valley Sanitary, DSRSD, Union Sanitary, Central San, and then DERWA, FREWA, and UMRA. We also looked at the school district calendars for this year and noticed that most of the public schools in the service area plan to begin classes in about mid-August. Looked at UC Berkeley and other local schools, and they will start classes for schools that use the semester system, mid to late August, and schools on the quarter system, in mid to late September. And that was Oakland Unified School District, West Contra Costa Unified School District, Hayward, UC Berkeley, and Cal State University East Bay. We also looked at, there was a calendar, and I'm going to the next slide. Looked at some dates in 2021 and some of the district key activities and actions that normally take place, specifically in June and July, and what the impacts would be if the board chose to change their vacation schedule. I don't know if you can read that on screen, but on the table, if, for instance, the board chose to cancel their second meeting in June 2021, right now we say that there is no impact. However, if we had to make a decision and the board needed a little bit of flexibility to make further decisions about rates, then staff would have to complete actions earlier. They would have to prepare documents earlier. They may not have enough time to go back and prepare scenarios if the board, if staff presented a rate increase and the board wanted to look at different scenarios before making a decision. If you cancel the first meeting in July, it could potentially impact legislative activities and may necessitate an additional LEG HR committee meeting in July. And Marlene can speak more about that. If you cancel the second meeting in July, the multifamily lien process, which normally happens around that time, that could impact some of the work that staff would have to do as far as notifying customers, gathering data, and preparing documentations, as those liens have to be filed by August 10th. And that's the county's deadline. Canceling the first meeting in August would potentially impact the board's ability to act on legislative measures, since the legislation would go into recess and the board wouldn't have enough time to have meetings so that they could provide input on measures that may impact the district. And if you stick with your regular vacation schedule, the second meeting in August, during election years, we normally schedule a special meeting because most of the second meetings fall outside of the timelines for if you want to exercise your AB 408 authority. And so canceling the second meeting in August has the least amount of impact. And that the schedule is on screen. And so this information is provided so that you can have a discussion on whether or not you want to consider changing your vacation schedule for 2021 and possibly going forward.
So, is that the end of?
Yes, I'm getting there.
Thank you. So I have a question. Maybe this is a rhetorical question. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that canceling the second meeting in August has the least amount of impact because we've been doing it since 1985 and have therefore adjusted all of our scheduling and timing based on that. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the status quo has the least impact on our workflow. You know, I do think that since 1985, clearly school schedules have changed dramatically. So I'm inclined to want to afford. I mean, I don't know. Another question I would have is how many staff, how many of our staff are impacted by when we don't have a meeting?
When we don't have the second meeting in August?
No, if we cancel a meeting, for any meeting, how many of our staff are impacted by their need to attend or be part of conducting one of our board meetings? Am I making sense?
Would you like me to try to respond to that?
Yeah, because I'm not.
So, President Young, I'll try to respond. Of course, I just representing my understanding of how staff approach board meetings. So, with the we do have board meetings where bringing the actions for board consideration are inflexible. And those are, to a degree, the budget and rates, and the public hearings, the things that you're considering around this time of year, and it's inflexible. Also, if it turns out that we need to modify the process and come back again, in order to get the rates done, for example, or the liens done, and so certain staff would need to be here to make that happen. Otherwise, a lot of the things that are on consent calendar, the staff have the ability to do it, to bring it forward a board meeting earlier or a board meeting later. And so if they themselves, if the directors had a reason that they couldn't be at the board meeting, because my general practice is to ask that if you have an item, if you as a department have an item for board consideration, that you be present to answer the questions, that there's some flexibility there for directors, the ones that come to these meetings, to adjust, to accommodate their own schedules to the degree that they can. So I tried to answer your question, but really, if you look at the list, staff will work to accommodate the list in the attachment of the available opportunities for a summer vacation. Staff will work to accommodate whatever the board is interested in doing, and we will move things up if we have to make sure that we have sufficient time to get them done, or we can do them afterwards if we feel comfortable that we're not putting the district at risk. So, but obviously we can't control the legislative process, as an example, so that example of the first meeting in August is something that would be out of our control. But the rest of them are generally within our control, and we would do our best to get things done.
Other board member comments?
This is Doug. I don't feel too strongly one way or another, but it does seem to make some sense with schools moved up as they are to have it the break in the early August rather than late August. But it doesn't really affect my schedule that much.
Well, or actually, really even July, because early August doesn't, canceling the first board meeting doesn't really help that much, because the break is gets covered up by some of the school year. It seems like the second July meeting, the easiest one in some ways.
And can I make a comment? This is Risha. I just wanted to make a quick comment. Just looking at the August 2021 schedule, and if the board was to take a vacation between July 28th and August 23rd, canceling the first meeting in August, there would still need to be, if it was this year, a special meeting to exercise your AB 408 authority if that came into play. So if you were on vacation, and I'm going to talk about that in the next presentation. I'm up again. The board has a short time period to exercise its AB 408 authority, and this year it's August 12th through August 19th. And so if
right.
And so we have to take that into consideration during an election year. If you decided to cancel the first meeting in August, that you may have to end a vacation or something to come back or call. I don't know what the Brown Act is going to require during our next election cycle, but that's also something to take into consideration.
May I speak?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that Risha made a strong point there. The second meeting in July, if we were going to change the date, because right now, as it stands, the dates that schools are opening is moving further and further back. I'm hearing schools planning to open August 15th or thereabouts. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not even a dink. I'm a sink. So I don't have to worry about the kids' issue, but I want to be sensitive to what will help staff and still be able for us to get our business done. That's all I had.
Okay.
I'm satisfied with the current vacation, but I'm willing to listen if there is. Is someone needing an accommodation? It's worked for us thus far. I can always plan my vacation every year. So tell me why we should make the change. That's all I need.
I mean, in my initial, my interest, we're not making board it's not really board policy. It's a calendar item, but,
understood.
The biggest change, I think, is that school year's change. It used to be things started after Labor Day. And the rationale for having a vacation, not having a meeting at all, as our survey showed, there's a numbers of boards that don't cancel meetings at all or have quote-unquote vacation. And it seems to me the reason for summer vacation is to accommodate people who have children who are in school. And if school is now in session during the time when we would have afforded people the opportunity for vacation, then the logic to me would be to, the one that makes the most sense to me would be the second meeting in July, which if we were doing it this year and we're looking at potentially having a public hearing for a second meeting in July, wouldn't work very well, but, such as it is. That's the rationale, Lisa.
All right. I guess my question is: this something that has to be resolved now, or is it something we can revisit after we know more, perhaps in January?
No more about what?
No more about kids on vacation and who should be accommodated and. I'm just asking questions, Marguerite. Sounds like you want it to go to July. Is that correct?
I mean,
is that what you're...
That if I were to make a motion right now, I'd be moved. I wanted to wait for this information to understand what was impacted and when it made the most sense. But I am in favor of moving it off of the second meeting in August, because I don't think for any of our family that are, or future board members that might have children or grandchildren, that, you know, school schedules would be, you know, a factor for. And this has been going on for years. It's not a new thing that the school schedules are, have been moved back into the early part of August. So if I were making a motion, I'd be moving that we cancel the second meeting in July.
Okay, so this is, all right.
And I would just remind us all that this isn't just about the seven board members. There's a lot of staff that are involved. We'll put together the board member, the board packet, as well as attending the board meetings to make sure we have information.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that, I mean, not for me. I don't think it's for anybody that's on the board right now, really.
Yeah.
Other than our convenience. Maybe John, actually, in a couple years with grandkids, but.
Flexible any way it goes.
Speaking personally, I would prefer to leave it the way it is. I do, you know, have more of a break when we have the long weekend at Labor Day, and I think that that's really useful and is a preference for me. That's not really an issue for the next few years, just given the 5-week schedules for the next few years in August. So I don't have any inconvenience trying out something different for the next, you know, 1 or 2 years after this year. But, you know, in general, that would be my reason for keeping it with the second meeting in August. But, you know, I do recognize that there's other people involved. And, you know, if we had, you know, individuals, you know, nobody on this board has a particular inconvenience with the current set up for reasons of kids in school, but if that was a significant issue from the staff who present with us, I'd want to help accommodate that, you know, if not by modifying our schedule, at least recognizing that issue and allowing board member or allowing staff that aren't required to attend every meeting to you know, defer a presentation that could be discretionary.
I'm comfortable as it is. I don't see any particular extraordinary reason why it should be changed at this point. I like August. It's cooler going towards August and September as opposed to July when they have all of those hot family reunions.
So you're saying you use it as an excuse not to make it the family reunion? Or?
You weren't supposed to say that out loud.
Okay, well, you know, for the sake of just
but dealing it has with this
item, I will make a motion and we'll see what happens. I move that we can't, that in July 2021, that we cancel our second meeting in July, and then that we evaluate it after that.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Let's have a roll call.
All right. Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
No.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
No.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes, okay.
President Young.
I vote yes.
That was a yes.
All right, so it's 5-2.
So they have a 5-2 motion, an unusual split of the votes to change our vacation in July in 2021 to the second, cancel the second meeting in July.
And we're going to come back and evaluate. I need to put this down. We want to evaluate
and
this.
To evaluate it for subsequent years.
Okay.
Does that make item 11 a non?
No, because that was for 2021.
Oh, I beg your pardon. No.
Okay, so the potentially more consequential item is not coming up is number 11, right. Which also is for you, Risha, I think. Yes?
It is. Give me one moment. Let me pull out my notes. And let me get to the slide. It's going slow. Give me one moment. And there we go. Okay, the next item up for discussion is on AB 408, the Board Appointment Authority under Assembly Bill 408. I'm advancing to the next slide. Give you some background on AB 408. The 2020 election timeline and the board's AB 408 authority, some things for board consideration and next steps. So, as most of you know, AB 408 amended the MUD Act to allow but not require, and that's very important, the board to appoint uncontested board candidates in lieu of holding an election. The district sought this amendment to alleviate the process of having an election and to save ratepayer dollars. Some other agencies that use AB 408 authority are some cities, regional park districts, school districts, enterprise and non-enterprise special districts. And the bill went into effect in January 2014, and this is the fourth election where the board will have the opportunity to exercise its authority. Prior use of the authority was in 2014, where the directors who were up for election in wards 2, 4, and 7 were appointed, and the director in ward 3 had an election. In 16, the directors in wards 5 and 6, which was in Alameda County, were appointed under AB 408, and there was an election held for ward 1 in Contra Costa County. In 2018, a special meeting on August 21st, the directors from wards 2, 3, and 4 were appointed, and an election was held in Alameda and Contra Costa counties for ward 7. And I just wanted to give you some...
And I recall that election cost $349,000.
Correct. And I wanted to give you some cost for those elections. The district has budgeted $500,000 a year per election based on previous election costs. And in 2014, we spent about $187,000 for the elections in both counties for Ward 3. In 2016, we spent about $88,000. There was no election in Alameda County. That was just the election in Contra Costa County for Ward 1. Bless you. In 2018, as Director Mellon pointed out, for Ward 7, the district spent $349,000. On an election in Contra Costa County, the costs were $9,100, about $9,100, and Contra Costa charged 95 cents per voter. That was about 94,000 voters. In Alameda County, it was $3.50 per voter, and the cost was $329,000, and it was about $4,600 in various printing costs not captured in Alameda County's costs. So they charge us additional costs for printing in another language and some other printing costs that they don't add in their overall cost. As I said, we budget $500,000 per election cycle. If we needed additional funds are available this year if for some reason we have to have three elections. Moving on to the next slide, the election timeline for AB 408 authority. This year, the nomination period opens July 13th, and it closes on Friday, August 7th. If the incumbent and one of the seats does not file by August 7th, then the deadline is extended 5 additional days for non-incumbents to file, and they have until 5 p.m. on August 12th to file. AB 408 authority is triggered once we receive notice from the counties stating that no or only one candidate has filed by that August 12th deadline. If we receive notice, then the board has a short time period between August 12th and August 19th to do one of three things: to appoint that sole candidate, and if there is no candidate, to appoint an eligible person or adopt a process to appoint an eligible person before the November elections, or proceed with an election. If there are more than one, if there is more than one candidate, let me get to the next slide. One moment. I'm going.
We might have lost the audio from you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, now.
Okay. So what did you not hear?
I don't know.
Cut out right okay, after. That's okay. So more than I was talking candidate. About
not here, please say so.
All right. So okay. So I was talking about the nomination period, which is July 13th through August 7th. And if the incumbent has not filed by 5 p.m. on Friday, August 7th, then the counties extend the deadline for filing to 5 p.m. on August 12th. AB 408 authority is triggered if no or only one candidate has filed. And so you only get to exercise, the board only gets to exercise AB 408 if there is only one candidate for a seat, and that's an incumbent or non-incumbent. If every open ward seat has two or more candidates, then AB 408 authority is not triggered and an election must go forward. As you saw last year, we had two seats where there were, three seats, I'm sorry, where there was just one candidate and those were appointed. But in Ward 7, where there was the incumbent and an opponent, there was an election. I also wanted to point out there's a narrow time frame. Give me a moment. All right. There's a narrow time frame to exercise your AB 408 authority, and this is when we talk about vacation scheduling, because our first board meeting in August is August 11th, and the second board meeting is August 25th, and you traditionally cancel the second meeting. The time frame for exercising your AB 408 authority falls outside of those board meeting dates, and if we knew that there was only one candidate, even if we knew there was only one candidate on August 11th, we still wouldn't be able to appoint that person or even take any action until we receive notice from the counties. And so what we're asking is the board, you have discretion to direct me, the secretary, to schedule your August 2020 meetings as follows. If we receive notice from the counties to schedule a special meeting between August 12th and August 19th, or do not schedule a special meeting or exercise your AB 408 authority and proceed with an election regardless of the number of candidates running for an open seat. And just wanted to point out that even if we receive notice, if we know on August 12th that the incumbent hasn't filed or that there is only one candidate, we won't receive notice from the county, official notice at least, until about August 13th. Once notified, we'd need time to schedule a special meeting of the board and get your consensus on a date. And so taking all that into consideration, looking at the calendar, the week of, I believe it's August 18th, you only have 3 days, the week of August 18th, to schedule a special meeting if you want to exercise AB 408. So with that, next steps, you can direct the secretary to schedule your August 2020 meetings and hold your first meeting on August 11th. Consider canceling your second meeting for August 25th, and then we'll schedule the special meeting between August 12th and August 19th.
So this is This is Doug. I you know, all this seems to make sense. I guess the dates just don't line up too well this year for our board meeting. We pretty much decided. I was certainly one of the last holdouts, thinking that we should have elections whether there's only one person on the ballot or not for a seat. But you know, once the costs of this started skyrocketing, it just hasn't made sense. And I think we should do what we can to hold down those costs. We can obviously schedule a special board meeting between the 12th and the 19th, and if it's not necessary, we can cancel it, and it seems like that's the most straightforward way of doing things. That's what I would support.
I have a question, Risha, that I asked you at the end of last week, and I don't know whether you were able to get an answer on it or not, is that I'm sort of in line with Doug, in that incumbents, people that have stood for election, I don't have a particular problem with them being appointed if nobody chooses to run against them. But if somebody has not held office or has not held this seat, then I do think that democracy trumps dollars, and that that individual should need to build support and stand before the voters at least once. So my question, though, is whether the board, I'm in favor of us scheduling a special meeting August 12th, between the 12th and the 19th. Yes, my question is, are we compelled to... can we exercise our authority under AB 408 ward by ward, or do we need to make decisions en bloc?
And so, Director Young, I started researching that question, and I would like to get back to you with a complete answer. And if there are any other questions from the board, I will take those questions now and come back with a complete answer.
There any other questions or comments from the board, or a motion?
Comment, if I might.
Sure.
My feeling is, yes, I appreciate the concept that we've got democracy versus dollars, but I would like to approach it from something a little bit different, and that is the dollars in this case don't go into any one of our pockets. It goes into district operating budget. And last time around, my view of the $349,000 that was spent in the fashion it was cost us two full-time equivalents that we might have had an option to hire. And when I look at it from that context and what we do in good service to our district, I don't view it as democracy being trumped by dollars. I view it as service to our ratepayers being provided.
Well, but AB 408 didn't apply in your last race, Frank. You had somebody file to run. The money would have been spent regardless.
Well, I know in my case it would have, but in the other two cases, it would have been similarly expensive per board seat. And so the dollars that were saved there get plowed in.
Okay.
That's my feeling.
Marguerite, I'll move the item. This is John.
This is to have a special meeting between August 12th and 19th.
Yeah, if it's needed.
If needed.
Second.
If I can comment on the discussion, I do think Marguerite raises a very persuasive argument about the relationship of our customers as voters with the board of directors, and that might represent a pretty acceptable middle ground. I've thought about other possible ways to achieve that kind of middle ground, where we can have the cost savings by avoiding a cost share with the registrar of voters for the ballot itself, with other possibilities. You know, one of those that I had thought about was allowing a voter statement in the voter guide to still be used. That's not consistent with current law. We would need to identify another entity pursuing some kind of clarification to the elections process to see that happen. I don't think it's worth district resources to try to lobby for that. But if that's another type of way that we can let that communication or education, rather, of voters that they do have an elected board of directors that represents them. So I feel that tension, and but also Frank makes a very important point too. So I just wanted to make those comments, and we'll vote for the motion.
Yeah, Andy, this is John. I think what the point you're raising, that would be construed as a gift of public funds, even if you had no opponent, and you're using district funds to put a statement in the book.
No, I'm not explaining it correctly, or okay. You're not understanding it correctly. We currently do subsidize the ballot statement for candidates. We might not adopt that approach if we had one unopposed candidate. I don't make my suggestion with necessarily one way or the other.
Okay.
I think actually candidates do have to pay for their. We subsidize portion of it, but that's not the big, that's not the biggest cost
right.
associated at all. Any other comments? Or do you have a vote on the motion? Roll call.
Directors Coleman?
Yes.
Katz?
Yes.
Lenny?
Yes.
McIntosh?
Yes.
Mellon?
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. Okay, moving on to the general manager's report.
All right, President Young, board members, I have nothing to share under GM report today other than appreciation for the 6 hours that you have spent with us today providing input on the various items that we've talked about already.
Okay.
We're getting our money's worth out of you, Alex, before you go.
Every last nickel.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Okay, moving on to reports and director comments. We did have a board workshop this morning on financial stability and rates and charges. Encourage those members of the public that are listening and that did not participate in that to... tune in and look at the materials when they are posted later this week. Planning and Ledge HR committee minutes are in the packets. And if members have items for future consideration, they should direct them to the general manager. For the last time, I think, assuming things go forward. And then lastly, director comments.
Just letting you know.
Are there...
Yeah, we're just getting ready to adjourn.
Oh, okay.
Are there director comments? Any directors with comments for the board of public?
I do.
Go ahead, Frank.
Very important retail operation opened up in Castro Valley, Knudsen's Ice Creamery, and they are serving lemon chiffon ice cream. So I urge you to satisfy your heat needs the next couple of days and go to Knudsen's. That's it.
And nobody paid you for consideration of this?
No, they charged me the same $13 they always do for a quart.
Okay. Are there any other director comments? Okay. Well, then we will adjourn the last meeting in May. and reconvene same time, same bat channel on June 9th at 1:15 for our regular scheduled board meeting.